Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You guessed it, another episode of Gym Class All-Stars. We, your Gym Class All-Stars, are here to give you the rundown of all things sports, as always. Again, brought to you by the Viget Sports Betting app, where you can bet free coins and win real prizes. I was actually in third place at some point this week, so was doing pretty hot, have crashed back down to earth. But if you see those plus 880 money lines, I would go for it. So download Viget and understand what I'm talking about. All right, so moving into the week of sports, honestly, kind of a quiet week outside of the NBA's All-Star Weekend, which is going to happen mostly later today. We're going to start, however, in the NFL, as the biggest overall news would be J.J. Watt found a home, not Houston, not Pittsburgh, not Buffalo, not Green Bay. He is with the Arizona Cardinals, by far now the best player on that team, at least defensively. I believe it was a two-year, somewhere around $31 million deal. First thoughts here, do you think the Cardinals are going to win that division?
No, but I have a thought that can make them in the division.
Yeah.
All right. So this is immediately keen to my mind. You got DeAndre Hopkins. You got J.J. Watt. What's the third piece you're missing there?
I feel stumped here.
How? Think. Hopkins, Watt. Think about the Texans.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, you're right.
We're off to a horrible start. Incredible. Yeah,
no. But that's – see, I didn't even think of that, because I was like, they have absolutely no reason to acquire Watson with Murray. But at the end of the day, like, God, that would be scary.
But, like, you throw Kyler Murray, maybe a first-round pick and a third-round pick for Deshaun Watson. The Texans get a pretty reasonable return on Deshaun Watson. I mean, I don't think Kyler Murray is as good as Deshaun Watson, but
Cardinals
something.
Do that?
You know, they probably won't, because Cliff Kingsbury is enamored with Kyler Murray, but at the same time, you get a taller, better version of the quarterback, and I kind of like that.
Yeah. You know, it's this question that we've talked about a lot with NBA players or NBA teams trading lots of picks for players, is like, is the amount of picks or however else would have to be given to the Texans worth it? Like, is that the real difference value between Murray and Watson? Because I don't see a whole lot of difference between them. Obviously, I think Watson's a little better at this point, and I don't really know who I think is going to overall be the better one, but they could both very easily be top five quarterbacks. Watson might already even be a top five quarterback. So, like, at the end of the day, if you have Watt, like, the Cardinals already have a pretty good offense. You know, it needs some help. They need a real number two receiver, I think, but I don't think it makes them that much better, to be honest.
I think you're giving Kyler Murray a bit too much credit. From watching him, he is very consistent in terms of stats. He'll complete like 70-80% of his passes, but that will equate to 130 yards, and you're just like, well, cool, I guess.
That's true.
But I think Deshaun Watson, you free him, you bring him back with his teammates, you can probably get him for cheap if they're trading, you know, they're releasing J.J. Watt for nothing. They got DeAndre Hopkins for most of the second round pick. Who says no there? Just a thought, but it's a good signing. Like, going back to J.J. Watt, great signing. It'll definitely help bolster their defense. Their defense is serviceable. It needs a bit of work. So I think J.J. Watt, as long as he stays healthy, is a great addition. Nothing but the utmost respect for that signing.
Yeah. A little sad that we won't get to see all three Watt brothers play together. Obviously, I had some bias there, but no, I think it's a good signing. I think he's going to help turn that. You know, the defense, like you said, wasn't awful, but in a sense, is going to help turn them around to being hopefully one of the top. You know, you would hope that a team with J.J. Watt is a top 10 defense in football. They still have Patrick Peterson, so, and who knows who else they bring in. So they should be all right. They got the good, you know, base pieces.
Wait, I don't think they do anymore, actually. I think Patrick Peterson's, like, getting released.
Oof. That could be some news.
They're parting ways or something like that.
That'd be interesting. So we'll track where he goes in that case. Either way, though, Watt is someone that you, in theory, think is going to attract some free agents, especially on his end of the field, because the Texans very much proved that J.J. Watt cannot play for an entire defense, despite the fact that he can do his very best. Either way, Cardinals, probably the biggest splash we're going to see in free agency this year. So kudos to them bringing him in. It's going to be a very fun, flashy team to watch next year. Lots of roster moves. I said last week we're getting to the point where lots of players are going to get released. One of the bigger names sad to see the comeback player of the year, Alex Smith, has been released by the Washington football team. It is still up in the air if he's even going to play next year. It sounds like he wants to if a team gives him a shot, but I assume he'd only accept a role as a starting quarterback. Football team, though, moving on. They got Heinicke. They got whatever else they need. You think it's the right move for them, though?
Yeah, it's definitely helps free up salary cap because I think he was owed a good amount of money. And he is 36. As much as you like him, he's not going to be the guy who's going to put the Washington football team into the Super Bowl. Exactly. But I think there's a lot of promise there. I'm disappointed for Alex Smith's sake, but at the same time, like, it'll be good to him potentially find a new role or retire. Like, he did what he has done from a comeback perspective is utterly incredible. So I think his legacy as itself will be cemented in a good way. Maybe not a Canton type of performance, but still like a rememberable one to say the least.
Oh yeah. No, the injury he came back from, the fact that despite their record, his team did go to the playoffs is a very impressive feat. And also he had a very good career before the injury and all that, the comeback stuff. So yeah, we'll see if a team gives him a shot. I think if you need a good, if he's willing to take a backup, more teaching style role, I think he'd be a very good fit for younger teams trying to really hone their quarterbacks. I think he'd be awesome as Deshaun Watson or Kyler Murray's backup quarterback. But that's where the football team's at on the quarterback situation, moving on from Alex Smith. Sticking in that division for a second, one of your top tier players on the Birds staying one more year at least, that would be center Jason Kelce, who had to struggle through last year with the rest of that offensive line, but he is committed to Philadelphia, presumably to continue to be the starting center now with Jalen Hurts there. I assume you're pretty ecstatic about this one.
Yeah, compared to what I could be for a lot of other decisions Eagles made, I'm ecstatic about this one.
Yeah, pretty straightforward there. Kelce going to help rebuild that Eagles offensive line, at least for one more season. My team also bringing back an old, long time player. That would be our quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger. We talked about this last week. It was pretty much a done deal. They were pretty much doing the contract negotiation. He got to the point of about $14 million, a little more than that. Saves the Steelers about $16 million in the end run. So helps to an extent. And again, like I said last week, I think he's a better option than Mason Rudolph at this point. But so Ben back on a more team-friendly contract with Pittsburgh. Not a whole lot there otherwise, though. Detroit, probably the only other team making big noise. They signed Tyrell Williams as a wide receiver. We'll get to why that could be important in just a second here, because they also released cornerback Desmond Trufant, who, if you remember, was on the Falcons Super Bowl team that blew it to the Patriots. But the reason I bring up Tyrell Williams is because there's very high expectations that Kenny Golladay has played his last snap in a Lions uniform. So the question becomes, where would Kenny Golladay go? And what I've been hearing is Kenny Golladay to the Bears. And I want to know what you thought about that.
Well, Kenny Golladay, I believe, is an underrated receiver in the NFL, especially being on a team like the Detroit Lions. Most people are incredibly underrated or good in that team. It, obviously, him signing with any team makes them better. I guess what you're getting at is, okay, does this make the Bears any more desirable? I think it helps, but it's not a fix-all. It's like putting a Band-Aid over a dam leak. Like, it's only going to do so much, basically. They have so many issues with their offensive line, so many issues with their defense, which with Khalil Mack heading it should be a lot better. It does help. I mean, maybe it's a piece Russell Wilson could ask for, like we talked about last week.
Big, yeah.
But to me, it's not a fix-all. It's only going to do so much, even if, like, Trubisky or Foles is the starting quarterback come next year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think the line has to be the next thing on offense because no matter who you have under center, they're going to struggle if they have to run around the pocket as much as their quarterbacks had to last year. So that's got to be priority one. However, I really like the signing of Golladay because I equate Golladay and Allen Robinson as very – very close. Allen Robinson probably a little bit better, but they're pretty, if you have two caliber receivers of that high of a skill level, you're putting your team in a very good situation. You're gonna have Tyreek Cohen back next year. David Montgomery kind of had his ascension at the end of last year, at least in the second half. The offense is in a pretty good spot, but you're right, that line is the one thing they haven't touched yet really, and that's the worry, because if you do get stuck having Trubisky or if they bring back Foles again, like, it's pretty much going to be the same thing all over again, because Kenny Golladay is a band-aid in that situation. He doesn't, him being open doesn't matter if Trubisky has to run to the opposite side of the field just to not get sacked. Defensively, I agree. That's the bigger side, though. If their defense can get back to that elite level that it was that great year they had just a few years ago, that first year they got Mac, that's different. That then you don't need the offense quite as much. We saw the Steelers make the playoffs without any kind of a high caliber offense this past year. Had a lot of success, 4 losses, 5 losses. Defense is where I think Chicago's got to worry first, regardless of what Kenny Golladay does. That's pretty much it. I have here Golden Tate got released by the Giants. That was pretty much expected. They kind of had a falling out at the end of last season.
Let me break you some important news then today.
Love it.
I got a quarterback on the move.
Oh, moving.
Well, potentially. I mean, these are rumors.
Sure.
But our good friend Jimmy G being linked back to the Patriots.
Ooh.
Yeah. So the rumor is the Patriots' plan this offseason was, we tried Cam Newton out, didn't work. We're looking for another quarterback. And apparently Jimmy G is their plan A. So they're trying to lure back the QB they already traded to the 49ers. And it's interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, he is a Bill Belichick prodigy. He's had limited success. I mean, he's had success on a really good, stacked, complete football team in the 49ers. What do you feel about it?
Well, my gut reaction is this is the most Patriots thing I've ever heard of. Like, no, they get rid of this backup because they still have Brady. They don't need him. He hones his skill, gets to a Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, time to come home. That's terrifying, because I think it'd be awesome for them. I think the Cam Newton experiment obviously didn't go as planned, so it's time to move on. No need to bring him back unless it's a sign and trade type situation. I have heard, however, that San Francisco is very attached to Jimmy G, regardless of the injury history. They've seen the success when he can stay in the lineup, so they're attached. So getting him back is difficult, but if the Patriots are able to do it, we're going right back to New England being the top team in the East. I don't care how good the Bills get or were. Like, I really do think that's all they really needed last year. Their offense was lackluster, but it's because Cam Newton was completing well under the percentage we're used to seeing him complete, or a Patriots quarterback complete.
I think you're overvaluing Jimmy G here. I think you're delusional.
I don't love Jimmy G, and I think he tends to get overvalued. But at the end of the day, the Patriots, like, they're always a team that's right there. They're never going to be the worst team in the league. They're never going to be close to the worst team in the league.
But they don't have any, like, Jimmy G thrives with good players. At least is what it seemed like in the 49ers, my opinion. Their receiving core is still cheeks. They have not even begun to address. They have Julian Edelman. Give him all the benefit in the world.
Jacoby Myers did all right.
Who?
Jacoby Myers. Okay.
Exactly.
I understand. He went to Auburn, and so he had that kind of connection with Cam Newton. They didn't play together, but, like, they had that unspoken bond. So, like, maybe he did just outperform because he had a guy he was comfortable with. It's just the Patriots. It's more than anything else. I don't fully believe in Jimmy Garoppolo, but there's just something about the water in New England that makes me think that one move to get just good enough of a quarterback. Because I call Jimmy G a top 15 quarterback, definitely in the range of 11 to 15, but he's a good quarterback when healthy. That's all the Patriots have ever really needed. I mean, I don't want to compare Jimmy Garoppolo to Tom Brady, but Tom Brady, for the most part, didn't have the best receiving core, especially in the back half of his time with the Patriots. Belichick's smart enough to create an offense that doesn't need star offensive talent. I mean, Damian Harris was able to come in and be a 100-yard rusher game to game for the Patriots.
All right, we're going to play a game, because that comment has pissed me off about how he's the top 15 quarterback. I'm going to name quarterbacks, and you're going to say if they are better or worse than Jimmy G.
It's going to go well for me.
I know. So let's begin. I will count how many you say are better than them.
Okay.
We'll start with the gimmies. Tom Brady.
Sure. Better.
Aaron Rodgers. Better. Drew Brees. Russell Wilson.
Better.
Do I count Phillip Rivers because he retired?
I mean, Phillip Rivers is worse anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's a tough one, though.
I confidently say Phillip Rivers is worse than Jimmy Garoppolo. Phillip Rivers has never gone to a Super Bowl, and Jimmy Garoppolo, like a third of the way through Phillip Rivers' career, has already been to a Super Bowl.
Okay, fine. I will ignore Phillip Rivers. Ben Roethlisberger.
he's better than Ben Roethlisberger. At this point in his career, he's better than Ben Roethlisberger. Oh, he is not a better all-time quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, boy. All right. Lamar Jackson, I think, is better than
– Lamar's better.
Okay.
It's annoying for me to say that, but he's
so better. We're at five there. Patrick Mahomes.
Of course, Patrick Mahomes.
Matt Ryan. No, don't do this to me. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do it.
Man, I'll give you Matt Ryan, but Matt Ryan is so overrated.
I'm going to get mad if you slander Matt Ryan.
I'll say Matt Ryan's better, but Matt Ryan is not a good quarterback.
I'm going to get mad. You're going to piss me off. I'm going to yell at you. Okay, I'm going to ignore that. Josh Allen.
Josh Allen's better.
Good. Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson's better.
Okay, I think that's eight. Matthew Stafford.
I equate Stafford pretty evenly with Garoppolo. Maybe he's a little better, but like again, there's no success. Maybe he played for the Lions, so that's part of it. Matt Stafford, like, he's nothing special. He never went to a Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo went to a Super Bowl.
But you have to understand, and I don't think you're getting this through your little skull there, Robert, that Jimmy G had a pretty complete team, versus Matthew Stafford didn't have much to him.
I mean, most Super Bowl teams are complete teams. You can't. But
like, you're dealing with Nick Bosa. You're dealing with a three-headed running attack. You're dealing with I forgot the receiving core though.
Who did they have that year? They brought in Sanders that year. Who was their best?
Yeah, okay. I'll ignore the receiving core because the receiving core. I mean, they was George fast King. From what I remember. It wasn't incredible.
They had Dante Pettis maybe, who was a speed guy, and then Kittle was their number one receiver.
Yeah. What I'm getting at though is they also had a really good defense, like Sherman.
The defense was what got them there.
DeForest Buckner.
Right? Either way, what does Matt Stafford do that? God, I'm already blanking on who I'm talking about. This is going fantastic.
Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm saying as a quarterback.
What does Matt Stafford do that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't do?
Playmaking, the ability to throw downfield, less mistakes, less errors.
I'll give you the throw down field, but less mistakes, less errors is just going to come for Garoppolo. Matt Stafford's older. Matt Stafford has been here longer, but Jimmy is getting to that point where if he can just, like, my biggest thing against Jimmy is his injuries. It's like, if he can just play like four straight seasons, I think we'll see how consistent of a quarterback he actually can be. But at the end of the day, he's not. And that is the biggest thing holding him back. But like skill wise, comparatively to Matt Stafford, maybe Stafford is like a spot better than him at best. That's what I'll give you.
All right, well, Dak Prescott will throw in there.
Oh, that hurts.
Dak's
not good. Don't even argue for Dak.
He's better than Jimmy Garoppolo.
He's definitely better for fantasy. He's probably better than Jimmy, but like it's not by a wide margin.
Kirk Cousins.
Don't talk. Go home.
I think Kirk Cousins is better than Jimmy Garoppolo.
I completely and utterly disagree with that. I think Kirk Cousins is a fraud.
I don't disagree in terms of this, but I think he's better than Jimmy Garoppolo, though. Jimmy
Garoppolo very differently. So like...
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill, like, 3 years ago, I wouldn't have questioned him being better, but Tannehill has really worked on his play, and with the Titans, he's gotten much better, so I will say Tannehill's better.
Kyler Murray.
I just argued for Kyler Murray's sake. Kyler Murray's better.
See? That I think we're about a 15 right there.
Okay, well then I'm going to put Stafford right below and put Jimmy right at 15 because I don't actually think Matt Stafford is a better quarterback than Jimmy Garoppolo.
We're going to make a bet. And this is under the assumption that Jimmy G will stay in the NFC West.
Okay.
I think the Matthew Stafford led Rams will do better than the Jimmy G led 49ers.
How about, do you want to do it on the two games they play or do you want to do it on the overall record? Because the other thing is neither of these quarterbacks are super great injury-wise. Like, we might only get one game between the two of them.
We're going to have to go overall record, but we need it to do, like, how many they play.
The
caveat
of the quarterbacks playing enough games.
I'm going to title this episode the one where we just slander Jimmy Garoppolo for 30 minutes.
Just call it Jimmy Garoppolo's knees. All right. So I think that's what we got for football.
I'm not mistaken.
Oh, one more thing. Tom Brady had a rookie card sold for $1.32 million. It was the highest selling football card of all time. Of course, it was Timmy Brady, the best football player of all time. Shout out to him. Cool thing there. I think a Kobe card actually just sold for over $1 million. So Get your cards, guys. It's a good time for that stuff. All right, let's scoot on down here. The only sport really in full swing right now, I mean, hockey's in full swing, but there's nothing too eye-popping about the hockey season quite yet. So it's college basketball at this point because we're really rearing and gearing towards automatic bids, towards conference championships and playoffs. So the really exciting part of college basketball is coming very quickly. We're going to start here. Number four, Illinois went into this week without star point guard Ayo Dosunmu. He has since come back, but without him, they were able to defeat number two ranked Michigan, handing Michigan just their second loss of the season and putting Illinois into the definitive second place for the bracket for the Big Ten tournament. They have passed Ohio State. Ohio State had a rough week last week, losses to both Michigan and Iowa and Michigan State, actually, if I'm not mistaken. Three tough losses for OSU. Number 13, Kansas took out number three, Baylor. Baylor was two. That actually happened last week. We missed it. That was Baylor's first loss of the season, and they dropped below Michigan, just one spot to three. And that's where they're currently standing. It's been their only loss of the season so far, leaving the only undefeated team left in college basketball to be the 24, at least when I wrote this down, 24-0 Gonzaga Bulldogs. They're still the number one overall seed, expected to be the definitive number one overall seed in March Madness. That's the rundown right now. Kansas has turned their season around. They're back in the top 15. North Carolina looks like they're at least going to make the tournament and be a scary low seed as they took out Duke, killed Duke, if I'm not mistaken.
They killed Duke.
Yeah. So college basketball in full swing here. The one negative for a team, number 10 Villanova, has lost star point guard Colin Gillespie for the rest of the year. It's an MCL injury. I don't know if it was a tear or a strain, but they are keeping him out. They just had another injury get reported about their game last night. So they are kind of in the doghouse. My opinion, a team to potentially avoid. They do have Jeremiah Robinson Earl still at the power forward position, but a lot of losses this late in the year is tough to bounce back from. My question to you, do you have a sleeper team in March for March Madness this year? You know, obviously the bracket's still to be announced, but if they're to make it, a team to look out for, maybe take far if they got the good matchups.
If Duke makes in, I think they're a sleeper team, but they're not going to make it in.
I mean, yeah, they're not going to, but that could be a decent team. They get in at like a 10 or 11.
There are a lot of blue blood teams that are doing really horrible this year, but a good example of this, I think, is 2016 when Syracuse got in as like a 12 seed. They just ripped teams to the Final Four. Mm-hmm. So never count out a blue blood. I think Texas is a little bit of a sleeper team. And I mean that just like they can make some noise and I think compete with a lot of really good teams. So that's one I would worry about. Texas Tech, but they're kind of like everyone knows Texas Tech's.
Yeah, I mean, that was one I was going to mention, though. Mac McClug, the transfer point guard, I mean, he's sensational. They're
absolutely.
I like that, yeah. I mean, I've been high on Illinois all year. As much as I love Iowa, I think Illinois is the team in the Big Ten most primed for a big tournament run. They were ready for it last year, and of course it got canceled, and they are hot, hot, hot. Io is, in fact, back. He is one of the 20 finalists named for the Wooden Award. Those were announced, so we – not going to go through the whole list for you, but we are each going to give you our top five. For me, I have the recipient, number one being Luka Garza of Iowa. It was a tough decision, but I did go with my guy. Got number two, Ayo Dosunmu from Illinois. Three, Cade Cunningham, the freshman from Oklahoma State. Four, Corey Kispert as Gonzaga's representative. And number five, Hunter Dickerson, the freshman from Michigan. Two freshmen in my top five.
Very interesting. I love how you tried to humbly say Luka Garza will win. So good on you, I guess.
Try my best.
I agree. I do think Garza should win the award after kind of getting screwed out of it last year. I think the one that you're missing in there is Jalen Suggs. We kind of had mentioned that one before, just Gonzaga. I'm going to say he gets runner up. And I only say that because I think Gonzaga's overall success.
Yeah. I left Suggs off for the sake of I didn't want too many guards on my list, but he is having a absolutely sensational year. There's very, very realistic that Suggs is the one of maybe two or three, all three names that end up being in the top five for Gonzaga, but he's their best player. So I'm with you there.
Then I would have a number three. I'd probably It's tough because I want to say Colin Gillespie, but I think the fact he's hurt is going to just kind of bar him from anything. I'll say Cade at three. I think Io DeSumo at four. And then we will say, you know, Jared Butler, because he plays for Baylor. And I feel like you got to throw a Baylor player in there, despite the fact they did lose their first game. Those would be my five. I think Garza should win the award. I don't think they give it to Cade Cunningham, despite how great he's been. Oklahoma State is kind of a terrible. It's like Oklahoma from a few years ago, Trae Young. Like, it's it's cool to watch, but it's like they're not actually that great.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really think the biggest threat is if Illinois wins the Big Ten championship, maybe Io gets it at that point, or Kofi gets it. I don't think Kofi's going to win, but
if Kofi wins it, you're going to probably be on suicide watch for a few weeks.
Yeah, all of Iowa City is going to be on suicide watch if Luka Garza loses this 2 years in a row. But no, I think Luka's going to win it. I think Iowa has, despite, you know, some struggles that we went through, got to the point where we're still a definitively top 10 team, probably closer to top five even, but we're very good. And Luka is still the most physically dominant player in college basketball, despite individual matchups that have occurred. He's doing really well. Iowa, again, top 10. They're, I think, the 3 seed, if I'm not mistaken, in the Big Ten tournament right now. So hats off to Luka. No Obi Toppin in your way this year. All right, that's it for college basketball. One more sport we're going to get to is going to be professional basketball. Skipping the MLB this week, spring training, not a whole lot going on. Odorizzi signed with the Angels, if I believe. That was pretty much the only real signing.
And don't worry, the Phillies are still losing, even in spring training, so we're doing great.
It's our good buddy that we had on the other show said to bet against the Bulls, wins you a lot of money. It's going to be time to bet against the Phillies. It'll win you even more money. All right, moving into the NBA, the hot conversation piece this weekend is absolutely all-star weekend for loads of reasons. So we talked about the reserves a little bit last week and our thoughts on that. We mentioned that Devin Booker was Anthony Davis's all-star replacement. Devin Booker got hurt, and Mike Conley in year 14 will be making his first ever all-star game. Some say it's earning him that ridiculous $40 million contract he got and is currently still riding, actually. But he will be the guard. So first off, let's start just with that before we blow up into the rest of what's going on with the All-Star game. Do you think Conley was the correct choice for Devin Booker?
To my good friend Eric, who had multiple times debated me on which guard was better, if it was Mike Conley or Jrue Holiday, I hope this puts that argument to rest that I was 100% right. Mike Conley is now an All-Star game starter. I don't see Jrue Holiday anywhere close to that. So hats off to me, I guess. This is the tough thing, because I know we're going to talk about the other replacement momentarily, so you can get annoyed for no reason, because, you know, you're a privileged Heat fan, I guess. But what I'm getting at, like, Devin Booker being a guard, you replace it with a guard. I don't think Chris Paul is the necessary replacement, because Devin Booker being a shooting guard, he's more of a ball handler, obviously, so Mike Conley can maybe do a bit more in terms of scoring. It's a tough fit, though, regardless.
I'm gonna say this. Devin Booker replaced a forward. So you do not need to replace Devin Booker with a guard. Meaning, in my opinion, there are only two people more, and I stretch the word more a little bit because he is the starting point guard in the best team in basketball, but more deserving than Conley to make this. Number one, first and foremost, is Brandon Ingram should have been the other All-Star. No question about it in my mind. You're talking about stats.
Oh, really? Brandon Ingram's an all-star now, huh?
At this point, because of who we had to remove.
Thank you.
Brandon Ingram was not in my initial top, 12 that we named. But if we're stretching to 14, he's in my top 14.
That's good. Good to know.
DeRozan's the other name because he was the name I had put on my initial list. I just like that the Spurs have been doing well, and he's still been doing pretty well. A pretty out-of-position job. He's essentially playing power forward for the Spurs at this point. They don't really play two big men at a time anymore. But those are who have been. I'm not mad because I love Mike Conley. I always thought he was a player capable of making an all-star game, but, you know, stacked Western Conference, injuries always played in. So it's nice to see. But Mike Conley, despite the season he's having, is not somebody you would consider, especially at this stage in his career, an all-star. And that's kind of what we thought would happen as COVID has – this wasn't a COVID-related injury, but COVID was going to take place in some way and affect this game. And it has, as we're going to move forward here, just announced today, hours before the game, both Sixers that made it, Embiid and Simmons, will not play. The replacement is Zion. I'm not quite as mad as you think I am, but I'll get to why I'm mad in a second. But let's start, stay with Simmons and Embiid. Do you think this game should even be played if they're hours before being pulled, saying it's not worth it, the barber had a positive test, you guys can't play? Is it worth letting the rest of them play?
We might as well, because I don't think there was a whole contact tracing thing. So health-wise, I think they can make it play. But like every day and every replacement has made my interest level in this game, which is already kind of minimal, go down even more. To me, just, you know, I don't know if you can bet on this game, but I'll put it this way. I would put a second mortgage on your house to bet on Team LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
At this point.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm sure it'll be a decent game, but I'm not overly excited for it at this point because, you know, the Sixers are out. There's definitely a lot of replacements in there. This, that. I don't know.
The NBA didn't want either of us watching. No Heat made it, and then no Sixers playing in it.
Yeah, this is all a conspiracy.
They don't like the Gym Class All-Stars. We're getting their content out too quickly. They don't like how
we're literally screwing over the NBA.
Hey man, it's the business.
We're on a list. That's why I've been blown up. We're just on the NBA's radar. Like, we have to censor these people.
We're on that blacklist. All right. So the biggest thing here was that Joel Embiid was in fact a starter for Team Durant. He was actually the first player Kevin Durant picked, which I thought was cool. Zion Williamson is going to be his starting replacement. Okay. I'm mad. I am not mad that Zion specifically is a starter. I think he's a super fun player to watch. And for the All-Star game, he's a very good fill-in. My qualm was this. I obviously didn't like that Nick Vucevic made the All-Star game. The Magic suck. And if you wanted a center, it should have been Bam. If you bring in Nick Vucevic for the sense of he's the second center, he's really the only other center. Like, there's other big men, but he's the only other true center that Team Durant has sub Embiid. So why would he not be the natural replacement? I am led to believe it's because he's not good enough. So why not draft a player that might be good enough? That could have been Bam. Obviously, it wouldn't have been Jimmy because he's not a center. But, like, I just – the whole Vucevic being in it still doesn't quite make sense. And now they're starting a 6'6 center. We're going full-on Houston Rockets at this point. It's just these Eastern snubs perplex my mind.
You're foolish. You're an imbecile today, Robbie. It's getting incredible. Listen.
Shade?
Team? Yeah, plenty. This is where the beef starts. It's just this episode right here. Team Durant has the luxury of having one of the greatest coaching minds in the world. That is Doc Rivers as their coach for tonight. And I know this game means the world to Doc Rivers, and he is going to do everything in his power to bully the stacked LeBron team. And what that means is putting in LeBron's kryptonite, which is Zion the Machine Williamson, who is going to dunk all over LeBron. And that top shot is probably going to go for like $6.8 million by tomorrow because people are just paying for air at this point. So this game means the world to Doc Rivers. He'd rather win this game than win the NBA title. I'm telling you right now, he will not lose this game. Honestly, it's more just like, let's make this fun. Yeah. It's going to be a mess tonight. I will tune in. I will watch it. I will give you 30 seconds of content next episode about what I thought about it. It'll probably be, this was fun. Maybe do it again. Smiley face. And that'll be about it.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty good. That sounds pretty good. Either way, the only other real storyline here. So I mentioned Embiid was the first person Durant picked. The first overall pick in the draft was Giannis by Team LeBron. The last two picks in the draft were Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell, followed by Jazz center Rudy Gobert. A little bit of shade was assumed here that the two players on the best team in basketball were the last two picks in the draft. Do you think this was shade, or do you actually think that those are the two worst players available? Well, you know, this is before Conley was named.
Before Conley was named, right?
Yeah.
I don't – It's got to be a mix because Rudy Gobert is kind of – I don't know how Rudy Gobert wasn't drafted before Vucevic.
The big quote was LeBron goes, I need size with Sabonis and Gobert still on the board, and he picks Sabonis.
That's I mean, I'm sure LeBron's a little bit petty like that. I'm sure he wants to be in first place. I think people don't get along with Donovan Mitchell, though. I have nothing wrong with him. I think he's a very passionate individual who just keeps wanting to get better. But I tend to believe he rubs people the wrong way at times. I mean, think about his rookie year with Simmons. Like, he was literally starting beef with him just on repeat. And then even this year, like, he's still going after people. Granted, he doesn't get the respect he deserves, and I understand why he's a chip on his shoulder, but I also think that rubs veterans the wrong way to a degree. Someone like LeBron especially, who is the king of petty, to be quite frank with you.
No, you're completely right. There's that kind of thing that we don't get to see as fans because it's the behind-the-scenes type stuff, but if Mitchell isn't the players or the coach's favorites, that's really where it's going to play in. Last year we heard that Jimmy Butler supposedly wasn't the starter because just the coaches don't like him. Like, that's just a thing that plays in that we unfortunately don't get to see. Honestly, hearing that and then thinking about Jimmy Butler, quote, not making it because Bam didn't go, makes me think both of them were lies. But at the end of the day, if one of them was true,
they're both lies.
The first one.
I want you to know, like, from an unbiased fan, those are both lies.
No, I'm pretty damn certain Jimmy Butler didn't make the All-Star game this year. Last year, I would, like, kind of believe, because at the end of the day, he's way better than Pascal Siakam, but, like, I get it. So, either way, just going to quickly now go down the list just so you guys know the two teams. So, for Team LeBron, the starting lineup is Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Nick Jokic. Their reserves being Jaylen Brown, Paul George, Rudy Gobert, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Domantas Sabonis, and Ben Simmons. Then Team Durant, so Embiid would have started at center. Instead, it's Zion. So the starting lineup is Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, Jason Tatum, and Zion Williamson, with the reserves being Mike Conley, technically both Anthony Davis and Devin Booker, James Harden, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell, Julius Randle, and the Vooch.
The Vooch.
All right, that's the All-Star teams. Again, the game, I think, 5 o'clock Eastern tonight. Tune in if you're excited. Otherwise, just let us know how you think it went, if the All-Star game even should have happened. Little more here. On the NBA, we saw that the Detroit Pistons finally reached their buyout with Blake Griffin. We ran a poll who you think he was going to sign with. The Miami Heat did win the poll. I would like Blake Griffin in Miami, but are there any other teams you think would be maybe a better fit for Blake in terms of trying to get him a championship and trying to help win that team a championship?
I think you bring him back to LA. I think he can do a lot of good there. In terms of which LA team, that's up to him. But I think currently the Lakers could use him more, but I also think he'd be more inclined to sign with the Clippers, if I'm not mistaken. I know you. Yeah. To me, it seems the Clippers, they have forward depth, obviously, but they could probably use another guy like Griffin. Well, any team could use Blake Griffin.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to play Nick Batum or Blake Griffin? I feel like that's a no-brainer at this point.
Listen, I'm just saying, whatever Nick Batum's contract is now, he's definitely worth it. He's doing quite well.
Oh, yeah. No, he's having a much better year.
Because it's not $27 million a year. It's great.
What a day. No, yeah, I think so. The front runner at this point seems to be Brooklyn. Obviously, they're competing for a championship, but the other part of it is he could reunite with former teammate DeAndre Jordan from the LA days. How likely do you think it is that he goes to Brooklyn?
I'm intrigued by that. Brooklyn's easy because they have no depth currently. Putting Blake Griffin with Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant is a scary, scary lineup. The problem is, like, anywhere Blake Griffin wants to go, if you were willing to play reserve minutes, oh my God, that team would be unbelievably scary. I just don't know how you fit him into the starting lineup with that group.
He wasn't starting in Detroit. I mean, maybe at the end just to try and up his value, but for the most part, he was coming off the bench to Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, but that, I think, was kind of like, let's preserve this asset, because he was coming off, like, knee surgery the year before.
That's true.
I don't know. To me, Blake Griffin still can play, and he's honestly one of the few people who started off like dunker, high flyer, all this, and then kind of changed his game to evolve with the way the NBA has been playing. So I think there's a lot of use for him. But you are right. Brooklyn does seem like a good landing spot just with their lack of depth. they probably would have to sign him pretty cheap, quite frankly.
But yeah, I assume he's going to sign for somewhere around what the way Howard did with the Sixers, like that veterans minimum type area. It's like a little bit higher than the actual league minimum, but he's not going to be making too much money no matter where he signs. At this point, he's got this title chase. I think Brooklyn's the best spot. I think you don't necessarily need him, but he would do fine on the bench in Philly. Obviously, I think he'd be a good fit for the Heat. And the other big names popping up, Golden State, Portland, in attempts to make moves towards a championship. Five-time All-Star, though, going to be huge no matter where he ends up going. Blake Griffin on the hot seat, I guess, at this point. CJ McCollum, shooting guard for the Blazers, has not played since January 3rd. He has, I believe it's an ankle injury. He has officially been cleared to practice, should return shortly after the All-Star break. Portland, if I'm not mistaken, is slotted in at 5 right now, but those four at the top of the West have been relatively impenetrable all year. CJ comes back, maybe Nurkic comes back. Do we see Portland maybe jump Phoenix or even jump one of the LA teams?
I need to see how many games back they are, but it wouldn't be that unlikely that they go to 4. I think after that, you're looking at kind of a really, really hot streak that's necessary to usurp like one of the LA teams or Utah, wherever they are. So to me, 4 is kind of like their ceiling. And I mean that just to make the playoffs. Like they could do a whole lot of damage in the playoffs themselves. But to me, 4 is kind of what they have to aim for, at least for the highest.
Yeah. At this point in Dame's career, and I don't want it to sound like I definitively think this is going to happen, but I do expect Portland to be at 4 for the sake of Dame has been known for his hot second halves, for turning Portland into a team that either isn't in the playoffs, into a team that makes it, or a team that is the bottom seed and gets all the way to 5 or 4 or 5. So I'm going to start expecting that. I think Phoenix is a very possible team to pass. I think you're right. The LA teams might be a little too much, and Utah might have given themselves too high of an advantage at this point. But I think it's possible they get to 4. And home court advantage, again, where it doesn't mean quite as much as it used to, does still mean something in the playoffs. So if they can get themselves there, which I think they can, it's a huge move. So CJ coming back, we love to see the Lehigh boy back in action. Hopefully no lingering issues with that. Three teams that we have religiously mentioned on this show for this past NBA season so far have been the Miami Heat, the Toronto Raptors, and the Dallas Mavericks. The big quality they shared is they all had very slow starts, and now the current quality they share is they are all three in the top 8 of their current conference. Miami currently sitting, if I'm not mistaken, at 6, Toronto at 8, and Dallas also at 8, but in the West. A couple storylines coming off of these teams. We're going to start with Toronto. Kyle Lowry has sold his house in Toronto. It could mean nothing. It very likely does mean nothing, but there's talk. The team's in contention to get him. We're going to hear Miami's name no matter what, so I'm going to leave them out of this. But the Sixers have become a front runner to get him because the big story I've heard is that the goal is to get him to Philly. He went to Villanova. He's a Philly-born guy. They'd be an awesome fit for him. That'd be a fantastic big four. Not quite the Warriors level of big four, but a very good big four. Other teams, Dallas, I heard Milwaukee, but I assume they'd have to trade Drew Holiday, which just makes no sense. So really, as the team being the potential front runner, what would you be comfortable giving up for Kyle Lowry? Because I know we talked about this when it first came out.
Yeah, I'm a little torn. I don't know how Kyle Lowry would slot into a starting lineup on the Sixers. And I mean that just with the utmost respect for how he plays. Like, he'll definitely add a lot in terms of shooting, or at least in terms of ball handling. But I really do like having Ben Simmons out there, just from both an offensive perspective from a facilitator and also just from a defensive perspective, because he can, I would argue, guard 1 through 5 on the floor. And, you know, maybe not the 5 as much, but he can do a lot of good. Kyle Lowry can play very good defense. He is a bit undersized, though. Definitely can't guard 5s as well as Ben Simmons.
Oh, but 1s and 2s.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not arguing that. I would have a hard time if they let go of, like, Matisse Thybulle. I think you have to keep. The one that got brought up consistently was Tyrese Maxey. I very much like Tyrese Maxey. You brought up a great point of, hey, sell your assets while they're high now rather than waiting. I don't disagree with that. I think the Raptors will put Maxey to good use, and I'm sure he'll do a lot of good. I wouldn't be mad if it was Kyle Lowry for Tyrese Maxey, maybe another player, and I mean a younger player as well. You know, if you really want to entice me, throw Korkmaz in there, because you know Korkmaz can be very hit or miss.
I think just monetarily speaking, Danny Green has to be one of the players in this trade, because you're not trading a big three member, presumably.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would feel terrible sending Danny Green back to Toronto, though, just from a pure like ethical perspective, because I know that man won out and he got out. If they trade Danny Green and Tyrese Maxey and maybe like a pick for Kyle Lowry, I think that's fine. I know you have your opinion on Kyle Lowry, what he can do for the Sixers, and I do agree with it. It's just, I really do like the way this team is assembled right now, and it's hard to justify like touching it. That's my problem with it.
I totally agree with you. The biggest thing is you're going to have to give up somebody that can shoot the basketball in order to get Kyle Lowry, along with, I think Maxey is a given, essentially. I do want to say that like Philly is pretty high on Tyrese Maxey, and I'm a huge fan because Tyrese Maxey is giving them Tyler Hero vibes. And where Tyler Hero has become a very overrated basketball player, he is still a basketball player with a very bright future. And if you see something like that in a young player, that's very good. So I understand the, you know, holding back on maybe wanting to push Maxey for a trade, because I get it. I had that guy that nobody quite understood until it really blew up in their face. So I get that. But my thing with Lowry, you brought up the point of you don't want to take the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands too much. And I absolutely agree, because the best thing about Ben Simmons is the fact that he can do everything except shoot the basketball. And I don't think it changes with Kyle Lowry, because at the end of the day, if you get Kyle Lowry, he's not starting for Ben Simmons. He's starting for Seth Curry. You probably have to trade Curry or bench Curry in this situation. Those are really the only two options anyway. But you don't start all three of them, because the whole point is you're not really playing the traditional 1-5. You are playing a guard, a guy that can shoot, Tobias Harris, and Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons is not really a point guard, which is the best thing about him. Ben Simmons guards power forwards and centers. He facilitates the basketball. He rebounds as the second best rebounder on his team. You don't approach the Sixers lineup, no matter who the roster is, assuming Ben Simmons is, quote, the point guard, because Ben Simmons being on the court should, no matter what, demand him bringing the ball up a lot. So if this my thought is the potential starting lineup looks something like Simmons, Lowry, let's say for the sake of it, Thibault, Harris, and Embiid. You're losing a little bit of three-point shooting because Thibault can't shoot the way Danny Green can shoot. But if you can work that one kink out, Lowry is maybe not quite as good of a three-point shooter as Seth Curry, but he's still a great three-point shooter. And he brings the one thing to your team that I think you've been lacking, which is the ability to just kind of walk up and pull up a three. But then you have two. You have mini Ben Simmons and Kyle Lowry. Then you got full-size Ben Simmons and the real deal. Those are two of the NBA's very best playmakers to go along with the best three-level scorer in basketball named Joel Embiid, a player having the best year of his career in Tobias Harris, and then it allows someone like Thibault and any other young guys that you keep around to get those minutes that they've been severely lacking, because you guys have someone like Curry or Green just taking up those minutes out of necessity at this point. That's where I'm at on that move.
I just don't think you're considering how, like, Matisse Thibault on defense has a great impact. Mm-hmm. You need that development for him to take the next step in terms of what he can do offensively to happen. And I don't know if that's necessarily gonna occur. So that's why I'm a little bit hesitant. Having Seth Curry off the bench is obviously great, especially if you have Kyle Lowry in front of him. But I think Danny Green can give you more points and still give you reasonably good defense. Thibault, like, off the bench, like, he does a lot, and his contributions should not be like undervalued in this case, but I don't think he does a lot offensively, especially compared to what you have currently. So that's kind of where I'm at. If they pull the trigger on it, okay, great. If they don't, I won't be crying myself to sleep about it. I think they're okay where they're at. We'll have to see, though.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you guys are already a top team in the top team in the East, actually. And you're right there, meaning you don't necessarily have to make a move to still get to the title. It's the idea of, like, does one more move put us over the top, or does it kind of take us back a step? And that's what you have to consider as the franchise. But either way, usually bringing in someone like Kyle Lowry can do good things. So we'll see what Philly does and any other team in potential moves for Kyle Lowry. But that's pretty much what the Raptors are up to at this point. They're going to presumably make some kind of move for another big man around the deadline. Maybe it's for Lowry. They've already kind of been converting VanVleet into the starter when Lowry misses time. So we'll see how that goes. Next team of those guys, we're going to talk about Miami for a second because another rumor came out in trade talks, and we hear rumors about the Heat trading for everybody's superstars. This is no news. But one that I didn't really ever take seriously until it came up and I really thought about it was they're monitoring Karl Anthony Towns. The Timberwolves are currently the worst team in basketball, just 7 wins. D'Lo and Cat Towns have played a total of 5 games together since acquiring D'Lo last year. It's clearly time for some kind of cultural change in Minnesota, but that hasn't been able to happen. So now it's time for personnel change. That means you have to at least open your mind to what you could get for Karl Anthony Towns. I assume the Heat would have to trade way too much and it wouldn't even really be worth it. But my thought became, I've been preaching John Collins. I think John Collins is a great fit for this Heat team. I don't think Cat plays enough defense, but at the end of the day, Cat pretty much is the four because the peak of this Heat team is Bam is the four for defensive purposes, but on the offensive side of things, nothing really changes. Cat is a 3-point shooter. He is a decent offensive big man and he's long, meaning hopefully, not definitively, hopefully Miami could teach him how to use that into becoming a serviceable defensive player, because obviously that's a good big, that's a really good big three. But like, I always hesitate when I really call Cat a star player, but in the right situation, it could happen. So what do you think the likelihood of A, Minnesota even moving Cat is, and then B, Miami being the team to acquire them?
I don't think they'll move Cat in by the deadline. I think if they were to move someone, it would be D'Lo, but they won't move him either because he's been injured. So there's no value there. I don't know. I feel like an idiot because I was preaching before the draft that I should have taken Anthony Edwards. That was under the assumption that D'Lo would actually play more than 5 games total. So I kind of feel stupid about that because if I knew he'd be injured every split second, every waking moment of the NBA games, I would have said, yeah, pick LaMelo Ball because now you have a point guard and I think he can be better. But that's what I'm here for, making some terrible takes. It's hard because from a contract perspective too, like Cat's got a mega deal. So you guys got to move money around too. And Bam got his rookie max extension, right?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Jimmy's on a big contract, yeah, but no one else is really on anything big, right?
Yeah. I mean the next, if I'm remembering correctly, the next highest paid player on the Heat is Andre Iguodala. It might be Goran after his contract extension, but Iggy's making around $15 million this year.
I don't know how the cap situation would work there. I mean that in the sense that you'd have to maybe get rid of one of those two guys, and I
think it would be Olynyk, Iggy, and then guess is the only way we get it to work because we have a very few amount of picks would be Tyler Hero. That would be my biggest guess. Maybe Duncan, if we can really sell him on Duncan, because we have Strus now. But I swear to God, if Miami trades Duncan Robinson, I'm not going to be able to continue. We're just like, not with this show, just in general, like I'm going to be heartbroken.
You know, I feel like Duncan Robinson going to Minnesota is like Dario Saric going to Minnesota, where he'll just go from being happy to just sad all the time. Oh, it'll be your fault. That.
Oh, everybody's sad in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota just, like, honestly, like, what a shitty place to be. You got cold weather, you got shitty sports teams. It's just, like, ice up there. Your best city's Minneapolis, which isn't saying much. You have the Vikings, you have Kirk Cousins. There's, like, no redeeming quality of that city currently. Other than maybe the Twins, and that's just because, like, the Twins at one point were decent. But even they weren't at the epicenter of baseball dominance.
Joe Mauer.
I love Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer is the redeeming quality of Minnesota. Hear her first.
No, that's absolutely true. I agree with that. But
if I could, yeah, Minnesota. If I was rich enough, I would buy a sports team and it would be a Minnesota sports team so I could just sell it.
See, I love that, but I would buy an Iowa sports team for the sake of it would probably cost about 25% less than any other state in the world.
But like if I have the money, yeah, and I could just, what if I could turn like the Minnesota Timberwolves into like a shopping center?
I would buy the Minnesota Timberwolves. I would full haul trade all of their good players, and then I would immediately sell the Minnesota Timberwolves.
if I sell the logo and team names to like a Chinese company and they just profit off it, like I get royalties from it. I don't know. I feel like that's a win-win. Like, to, I don't even know who's in charge anymore of this Timberwolves. To whoever's listening, that's clearly the Timberwolves owner, please quick sell me all of your assets and I will fire sale them to the nearest foreign company that I can find. Thank you. And welcome to the world of sports with Alex Baker.
We're big business guys here.
Big business guys.
That's harder to say than I thought it would be. All right, moving on. But either way, no, Pat Riley, a lot of GMs are expecting him to make a big move. Cat would be a huge move. So we'll see what Miami kind of does to try and spice things up. We do expect they will make at least some kind of move to try and put them back on track like last year. Dallas is the other team I'm going to talk about. Their moves, I assume, are actually more likely going to happen in the offseason rather than trying to compete this year. Because at the end of the day, trying to compete in the West when you're potentially going to go up against LeBron James in the first round almost is a lost cause.
I agree.
Two names to potentially monitor for Dallas at the trade deadline, if they are to make a trade, would be John Collins of the Hawks and Jeremy Grant of the Pistons. They kind of fit that need, the need of 4-5, stretch the floor, but really out there for defense and team building, team chemistry. I think both those guys really do fit the bill. But the big thing is, so Grant's not a free agent next year. He just signed the 3-year deal with Detroit. But John Collins is, he's a restricted free agent, but he's already said he's going to decline whatever option he's offered. He will become an unrestricted free agent. And the two teams that people have said are like the most prepared to offer him are the Heat and the Mavericks. I love the concept of the Heat, but I'm worried as a Heat fan that he's going to see Luka, he's going to see Kristaps, he's going to be like, oh shit, this is my big ticket because I'm their defense guy, and that's going to be what happens. So, what would you do you think the Mavericks kind of have that inside track to John Collins?
Yes, and that's under the assumption that you don't fire Sal Porzingis in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
But I think he could do a lot of good there. And I would be concerned. The Mavericks and Heat are always free agent tourist destinations, basically, where everyone talks about it. They go to the Heat, they go to Mavericks. But I think the Mavericks are a little bit better of a landing spot for them just from the fit, because they really do need a good power forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. One more thing on Dallas here. So say they fall out, say they don't even make the top 10, they don't make any extended playoff spot. Does Rick Carlisle still have his job?
No, there's no way. If they don't make the top 10, that you have to fire him.
So in that case, take it one step further. Say they make the top 10, but they lose whatever play-in game they're in. Does he get fired in that case?
Yeah, I would still probably fire him. I think you got to at least make it to the 8. And that's, I give Rick Carlisle the benefit of the doubt because he definitely has a lot of – he's done a lot with very few at times. And I think he's still a good coach. He just doesn't get the credit he deserves. I mean, even that championship at this point 10 years ago or so is something that's absolutely miraculous to think about. So I think Carlisle is good if he can at least make an effort at playing in the first round. This isn't their year, though.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So those are really the big storylines here in the NBA. We had a little bit of back and forth, however, on the I think it was the last game before the All-Star break. I was watching this Pelicans game, and I texted you, I think Brandon Ingram is one of my least favorite players in basketball. And after, and this is after I just defended him for an All-Star game.
You did.
The reason I said this is because I haven't watched a whole lot of Pelicans basketball, but when I do, it seems like the offense is essentially Lonzo doesn't exist unless he has to. Zion runs at the basket with his head down and his shoulder down, and whatever happens, happens. And Brandon Ingram gets to shoot whatever shot Brandon Ingram wants to shoot, which normally is fine because Brandon Ingram has, in fact, turned into a very good, at least offensive player. Scoring the basketball has become his big thing. He's very good at it. But his decision-making when it comes to the shot selection is very poor in the late stages of games. He can hit any shot he takes. But there is no reason for Brandon Ingram, of all people, to just catch the ball at the top of the three-point line and decide, I'm going to shoot it for no reason with a Celtic in his face. It's decision-making with him. I saw him play the Sixers, so I'm playing the Celtics. I saw him play the Heat earlier in the year. He isn't the smartest yet. He's very young. The reason I'm bringing this up, though, they're 11 right now. can the Pelicans make a legitimate push to the playoffs without making any kind of deadline move?
I don't think so, because I think they're going to get stuck in sort of this development hell. And I mean that just from everything's kind of young, and I don't think they have it figured out yet. They have the pieces, quite frankly, and they need that development to kick in. Like, there's a few ways you can put together a team. You can just take a bunch of veterans and throw them together. It's kind of what the Mavericks did 10 years ago. You have that sort of raised star, and I think Zion could potentially be that, but you have to surround him with pieces. And right now, Brandon Ingram is a great piece to surround him with. I think Lonzo has the potential of being that, but they're not there yet. And that's honestly the issue. You just sort of kind of need to wait it out with the way that roster is assembled. So this year, I would not put them in the playoffs. I think the Memphis Grizzlies, who are 10 right now, being that the Grizzlies are 500, and I think they're 16-16 currently, and the Pelicans are 16-21. That's basically a 5-game deficit. To me, that's a little bit hard to overcome with that team unless they absolutely catch fire, and I don't think they'll do that.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I actually think they may even fall a spot or two, because Sacramento isn't good, but they're always that team that's just like the next spot. They're like right there for whatever random reason. And, you know, some of their young guys are hungry, but also the potential of Whiteside of the Lakers has been talked about. We'll see how Damian Jones finishes out his contract. But yeah, that's pretty much where the NBA is at right now. So All-Star game going to happen tonight. I think games pick back up either Tuesday or Wednesday. So good spot right now. Blake Griffin, obviously, will tell you where he goes, and any other trades, free agent spots. We'll see if Andre Drummond does get bought out or traded, or he definitely needs to be bought out if he's going to Brooklyn. So we'll see what happens there. All right, we are going to do our superlatives today. Five for you, as per usual. Going to start with the MVP. Alex, who was your MVP this week?
My MVP is LaMelo Ball. Because as I said many episodes ago, our boy LaMelo's ceiling is Steph Curry. And I think he's like kind of proven that is true. And I was just like basically a Steph Curry without a 3-point shot. But he's honestly shooting pretty well. He currently is the clear-cut favorite to win Rookie of the Year. And I think has done a tremendous job and had a tremendous impact for the Hornets. I give him MVP just because it was kind of a question mark going into the draft, what he would do. And I think he's really shown that playing overseas professional basketball does a lot for development. Granted, also playing starting varsity when you're 14, that helps too. But overseas, there's a big impact that I think people need to realize.
No, it feels weird to call LaMelo Ball a more mature player than most of the other rookies. You can very clearly tell he played more like with a more mature than almost every other rookie, with maybe the exception of Tyrese Halliburton. Yeah, either way, LaMelo, you're absolutely right. The top clear-cut first-place candidate for the Rookie of the Year at this point. My MVP, going to go down to the college basketball, take you to Illinois. That would be Kofi Cockburn, second-best player and the other Illinois finalist for the College Player of the Year. My big reason, stats-wise, he didn't do much different than what he's used to, but like I said, Ayo Dosunmu did not play in their game against number 2 seeded Michigan. So Kofi Cockburn led the way and outperformed Luka Garza. Hunter Dickerson did something very similar a few games ago. So I wanted to shout out Kofi because this is a perennial superstar in the terms of college basketball that they are just handling very well, even without their best player. So shout out to Kofi in Illinois. That's my MVP this week.
To go to most disappointing. I'm sorry, yeah, Sir yeah. Thunder here.
No, you're
we
good.
We got to tandem this because honestly, you're right. The most disappointing award this week goes to just the NBA and the refereeing job.
Yep.
God, it's funny because when we played rec, you couldn't get a foul call to save your life. But like in the NBA, it's like there's too much.
It's all the fouls that they never called for us.
Yeah, it's like I wish when I got hit on the top of the head, like that I get a foul called. Right. There, if I get breathed on, I'll get a foul. It's great. Yeah,
exactly. But then there's the other side of it that fans on Twitter have kind of been enraged about recently, is that a player can lean in to a pump fake, the guy can jump on him, and it's a defensive foul every single time. There's this whole idea of natural shooting motion. if you're moving, if you're leaning to the left, you're leaning forward. That's not a natural shooting motion. And the refs have to realize that. Someone like Dwayne Wade, someone like James Harden abused the referee's inability to figure this out. They need to get on top of that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with trying to make contact. Like, I don't, if you get someone to pump fake and they jump and like go into them with the intention of drawing a foul, that's fine. But if it's like they're fading away, they're really trying, they're basically like limboing around you and you're throwing your body, like you're going up for a straight three and you throw your body as hard as you can to the right in hopes of like getting contact, that becomes a little bit too much.
Exactly. I think my least favorite though is if the defender just puts one tiny little toe in the landing zone, makes no contact, it's in between the shooter's feet, but his foot is in the wrong spot. That's a defensive foul, and the guy's likely shooting three shots. That is absurd. The definition of a foul is contact that impedes the shooter's ability to get the shot. Contact. Contact is the first word.
What I will say, though, is, and I know referees should be treated with respect because what they have to do is a very tough job. You're dealing with, at least on a basketball court, 10 people at the same time. You're probably watching where the ball is rather than like who is off ball. So you miss calls. Like, that is a guarantee in basketball. That's why everyone loves it, because there has to be a human aspect to it. Otherwise, it's no fun when a robot's calling fouls, because it slows the game down. However, there has been a little bit of a shift toward this, I don't want to call it dictatorship, but just sort of abuse of power with refs wanting to throw out people. Granted, there are a lot of times when people deserve to be thrown out for talking a lot of smack or saying some very bad things that I can't repeat. But have limits. It's the same thing with the whole flagrant one and flagrant twos. Like, I hate it so much. It's just, it frustrates me because it's so ticky tacky at times. It's not consistent, and it upsets me to a degree. Cause like, even playing basketball for, I think I started playing when I was 5. So it's been 17 years. So there are calls in the NBA that dumbfound me, and I couldn't even predict what would happen.
Montrezl Harrell got a technical foul for screaming "and one." I don't know how many people I've heard scream "and one" after a contact layup. And he literally goes, "I'm pretty sure this ref was just in her feels and she was not having it that day." And I was like, that's the thing. If NBA players are not supposed to fight back too much, they can't be in their feelings when feeling like they were given the wrong call. The refs absolutely have to be held to the same standard. You cannot just give somebody a foul because they looked at you the wrong way. You're a ref. You're not some godsend that is this player's all-defining law. You are somebody who is there to keep the game clean, and that's it. Yelling "and one," barely making contact, leaning in, like, come on, this is your job, you're professionals. All we as fans ask is that you do it correctly. That's our little rant on the refs. My disappointing was also the NBA. I went on this rant. Mine was going to be about the All-Star game, but I think we pretty much put that, you know, understood, like, it just, we don't believe it should be happening. That my big point being, they did it with the Rising Stars. Like, the Rising Stars were named, but there's no game. Why not just do that with everything else? I understand for the competitions it's a little less important, but yeah, that's my two cents. Move down the list here. You got a bad boy on your list?
I do. Donovan Mitchell. You've been a bad boy. Seems like every year the Utah Jazz come into Philly and it just seems like the Sixers get the best of them. Phenomenal game, by the way. I don't know if you watched it. It was one of the few Sixers games I had the opportunity to actually watch, because one, I thought it'd be interesting, and two, like, it wasn't some weird time where I just was busy. What a great game. Just the Jazz shot lights out and the Sixers kept it close, and Joel Embiid hit. Basically, Joel Embiid had his MVP moment of the season, which I don't know why I didn't put him MVP, but I think you must hand Joel Embiid the MVP award right now. That guy, all 7'1" of him, did like a step back three against Bogdan Bogdanovich, drilled it, and sent the game to overtime. But going back to Donovan Mitchell, bit of a hothead, was definitely getting frustrated with the refs, as we talked about earlier, and maybe slight bit warranted. But did not keep his cool. Got a technical foul in one possession. Next possession also got a technical. Throwing stuff, smacking Gatorade coolers. Not cool, dude. I know what it's like to be a fiery competitor, but I'm not a fan of that. And you can kiss Philly goodbye, Mr. Mitchell.
Hey, man. As someone who interacted, we'll say that, with lots of refs in his day, you gotta be able to keep your cool. Yeah, my bad boy, a slightly less exciting one. Greg McDermott, the head coach of Creighton, used a lot of racist remarks apparently in a post-game speech after a tough loss. His players came out and condemned him. I don't know if they went and fired necessarily or what, but his apology clearly was not enough. End of the day, this is a pretty straightforward thing. Treat everybody nicely. It's very, very simple and honestly not all that together difficult. If you are somebody who does not like a certain group of people, maybe you should not put yourself in a situation where you have to act, so maybe you can take the time to think about why you're that dumb. Sorry, that's my two cents. Don't be racist. This is terrible. I hate reporting it, but I thought this was worth bringing up because that stuff commonly gets overlooked. Greg McDermott, my bad boy this week. Moving on, top moment for the week. Any particular moment stand out to you?
You know, I don't know if you saw last night, Bleacher Report did a nice 2v2 game with a few rappers. It was Quavo and Jack Harlow versus, I believe, Lil Baby and 2 Chainz. Dude, you may laugh, but Quavo is unbelievably good.
He's so good.
He basically took Jack Harlow on his shoulders and just carried them to a victory. He made 2 Chainz and Lil Baby look stupid. And honestly, it's kind of fun. I was watching the highlights of it this morning, and Quavo, it was just draining everything. They're just giving him space, and Jack Harlow just kind of watching, just kind of observing him hit everything.
I freaked out because I thought your moment was going to be that horrible free throw attempt from Lil Baby.
Oh no, we're not going to report on that. But it just, to me,
fake news.
People got game. We got to respect it. That's why basketball is so much fun, just from the fact that a lot of people who you'd never think would play it just happen to be quite good at it. For example.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Quavo was the last All-Star Celebrity Game MVP, or maybe two times ago, but I'm pretty sure he won one.
I'm pretty sure too, because he's actually quite good.
No, he can ball. I'm pretty sure he played college or high school for sure. I don't know.
If he definitely played high school. Shout out the Migos, I guess.
No, 100%. All right, my moment of the week, mentioned this already, but as maybe undeserving as it could have been, I love seeing Mike Conley in the All-Star game. I've always loved Mike Conley. For some reason, I love Ohio State players when they're not at Ohio State anymore. So I love me some Mike Conley, year 14, first player to ever make his first All-Star appearance in his 14th or later season. So shout out to Mike Conley. Where the numbers may not be your career best, still well-deserved. You've had a fantastic career, so great job for you. One more award here. That is the return of the king. My return of the king for this week, I am going to give to the Luke of Garza. He is the only player to be All-American last season that is a finalist for this year's Wooden Award. Again, Pop more than likely the front runner to win it. Finished second last year to Topin. I talked a little slander last week on my boy and my team. Came back, had a good week, finishing strong, 2 seed in the Big Ten tournament. I expect big things, but I'm not prepared for big things. But either way, Luka Garza returned. You're killing it. Won today, which was the last game I believe you'll ever play in Carver Hawkeye Arena. Love my guy.
Mine goes to our good friend Josh Gordon, who has made a comeback. The NFL, unfortunately. You know, kind of screwed that up again for like the 18th time, but he's now playing for the new upstart football league, the fan control football league. And he plays, I think they're called the Zappers, but basically last night was his debut, and he caught a Hail Mary to win the game. Honestly, it looked like a NFL player playing against flag football players, which was quite funny. But good on Josh Gordon for continuing to play. He's still dominant, as we kind of saw last night. The idea is very interesting. Fans kind of control it. Every week, it sort of changes and whatnot. So definitely check it out. You can find it on Twitch, I believe. But Josh Gordon, return of the king, because he's back to playing. He does love football.
Get off the weed. He might have. Who knows? Awesome job, though, from Josh Gordon. All right. That is what we have for you guys today. Again, hope you enjoyed the content. Baseball is going to be back soon, so we'll be getting in the full swing for reports on that. NBA going to pick up after the All-Star break, and football again still underway. We're real close to March Madness. We have broken the threshold into March. It's a little bit longer, and we're going to be back filling out brackets, betting all the money we don't have. It's going to be a great time. Hope you guys have a fantastic week. Enjoy the episode, and we will see you guys next time.
Take care, everyone. And as always, I know we didn't talk about this episode, but Robbie still owes me a punishment. So once he gets off his high horse and buys some OJ, we're going to have a nice, wonderful audio sit. No, we'll have video for it.
I think I'm spending money on this. I'm stealing OJ from work. Hopefully,
that's fine. But you will need to ingest both mint flavor and orange juice, and our viewers will laugh at you. Stay tuned, though. We will have that coming for you. Robbie just happened to be lazy and forget today. But have a great week, everyone. Take care.